Get started. Okay, I was asked to start recording here. Good morning, everybody. Welcome. You've already been welcome, but I'll welcome you again. It's great to be here this morning. You may have noticed I don't look like Nick. Nick is still out of town. We've had guest speakers. Last week, Ralph preached on James 1 and did a great job. I really appreciate, Ralph, your openness and vulnerability, talking about trials and temptations. This week, we're going to talk about James 2 in a little bit here. We're going to continue the next several weeks when Nick gets back, finish out the book of James. You know, a good way to start a sermon is always just tell a joke, okay? So I thought, well, let's keep a tradition here. We'll tell a joke. I looked up jokes online, and I found a joke that was voted best Christian joke by readers of The Guardian. And I have to tell you, they have a weird sense of humor, okay? Whoever voted for this, it was an interesting sense of humor. But it is an interesting joke, and it somehow does kind of line up with the service here, so I'm going to tell it to you here. It's from the perspective of this imaginary person. It says, I was walking across a bridge one day, and I saw a man standing on the edge about to jump. I ran over and said, "Stop! Don't do it!" "Why shouldn't I?" he asked. "Well, there's so much to live for." "Like what?" "Are you religious?" he said, "Yes." I said, "Me too." "Are you Buddhist or Christian?" "Christian." "Me too." "Are you Catholic or Protestant?" "Protestant." "Me too." "Are you Episcopalian, Baptist?" "Baptist." "Wow, me too." "Are you Baptist Church of God or Baptist Church of the Lord?" "Baptist Church of God." "Me too." "Are you Original Baptist Church of God or are you Reformed Baptist Church of God?" "Reformed Baptist Church of God." "Me too." "Are you Reformed Baptist Church of God, Reformation 1879, or Reformed Baptist Church of God, Reformation 1915? He said, "Reformed Baptist Church of God, Reformation 1915. I said, "Die, heretic scum," and pushed him over the edge. Somewhat dark, really, but... You know... It's dark. It's definitely dark. You know, the thing is, though, we're laughing. I'm laughing a little bit. I don't know about you. We're laughing because, you know, I've heard it said before that humor is a way of kind of expressing feelings about things that you're uncomfortable with, you know? It's why potty jokes are universally funny, okay? Like, one that I heard recently, a decent potty joke: why couldn't the toilet paper cross the road? It got stuck in the crack. You know, it's just kind of funny because we're all kind of uncomfortable with this. We know it happens, you know, but we got to kind of deal with these feelings we have about something that's slightly uncomfortable here. The thing that I think is interesting about this joke: what are we uncomfortable with about the joke was titled "Bigot on a Bridge." What are we uncomfortable about here? Well, we're uncomfortable because we know that Christians should love one another, right? In John chapter 13. Jesus says, "A new command I give you, love one another. As I have loved you, so you must love one another. By this, everyone will know that you are my disciples, if you love one another." Jesus sets the mark here. He says, "As I have loved you," meaning putting others ahead of yourself. You know, not just, it used to be love your neighbor as yourself. That was the Old Testament commandment. Jesus says, "A new commandment I give you, love as I have loved you." What did Jesus do? Jesus was self-sacrificing. Jesus went out of his way to give his life for others. And that's the example we have as Christians. That's what we should be doing every day. When that doesn't happen, something is very wrong. And that's kind of, I think, where the humor comes from in the joke, because you know that that is very wrong, what just happened there. It can be, we have these divisions sometimes. Sometimes it's over doctrinal differences, like in that case. Sometimes it's just interpersonal things. Sometimes that was kind of maybe more of a macro difference. But there are micro differences. There are things that happen even within our congregation where these little divisions that occur. And you don't want that to be the case. I mean, we know that there shouldn't be factions. There shouldn't be discord. There shouldn't be dissensions within the church, right? But sometimes things develop, and it's wrong. And when we get into, you know, focusing on our differences too much, I think we miss how we're all unified under Christ. And we miss kind of what his message is of loving one another. In James chapter 1, this is from the previous book, just treading on Ralph's territory here from last week. It says, religion that God our Father accepts as pure and faultless is this, to look after orphans and widows in their distress, and to keep oneself from being polluted by the world. I always love this passage because it sets an example. You know, we think of, what is religion? Is it you know, having these big, beautiful churches? Is it praying every day? Is it being very pious and not eating certain foods? There's all these things that you can associate with religion. But really what Jesus says is it comes down to looking after those that needed help, protecting those that have a hard time protecting themselves, loving those, giving to them, not being corrupted, not being polluted by the world, not just letting the authorities have their way, the people that are in power, you know, abusing those that don't have power. Yeah. And, you know, we can take it very literally, say orphans and widows, someone that's lost a spouse or through death. I mean, you could say, you know, orphans that have lost two parents to death. That could be a very literal translation, but there's a lot of ways of looking at this. I mean, essentially, I'd like to think that he's talking about, you know, this is somebody that doesn't have the support they need in their life to raise their kids, maybe a single parent, or someone that doesn't have a parental figure in their life. Maybe their parents are even there, but their parents aren't really there, you know, because there's things going on that make them distant. And there are times that we need to, as a church, I think, support those that don't have parents, that don't have a spouse to help. We need to love those people and protect them and take care of them that don't have all the support they need. And that this is, I think, one expansion of that thought. It's tough. I mean, single parents have it really tough. And Gina and I are involved in the youth and family ministry, and I love all the single parents in our ministry, and I am so proud to serve with them in our ministry together. It's a real honor because they're very faithful, hardworking people, and they deserve honor, and they deserve protection when we can help and support them, because things get hard at times. James 1 takes a lot of time to build up people with trials. In James 1, chapter 1, verse 9, it says, believers in humble circumstances ought to take pride in their high position. In James 1, verses 2 through 4, it says, consider it pure joy, my brothers and sisters, whenever you face trials of many kinds, because you know that the testing of your faith produces perseverance. Let perseverance finish its work so you may be mature and complete, not lacking anything. You know, if you've been through hard times, I mean, God has been working on your heart. God has been making you mature and complete. And the brothers and sisters that are going through trials, that's what God is doing. We want to love them and respect that process God is putting them through. In James 1, chapter 1, verse 12, it says, blessed is the one who perseveres under trial, because having stood the test, that person will receive the crown of life that the Lord has promised to those who love him. God has shared his promise with all people, rich and poor, people near and far here in the U.S. and abroad in Haiti, whatever background you have, whatever separates us as people, God has shared this with all people. And we want to honor our brothers and sisters, every one of them, no matter what their background, no matter what where they're coming from. So we get into James 2 then. In James 2, there's a problem. James 1 sets up nicely this idea of honoring those that are coming from humble circumstances. He says in James chapter 2, verses 1 through 6 here. I'm going to switch the slide. Thanks. My brothers and sisters, believers in our glorious Lord Jesus Christ must not show favoritism. Suppose a man comes into your meeting wearing a gold ring and fine clothes, and a poor man in filthy old clothes also comes in. If you show special attention to the man wearing fine clothes and say, here's a good seat for you, but say to the poor man, you stand there, or sit on the floor by my feet, have you not discriminated among yourselves and become judges with evil thoughts? Listen, my dear brothers and sisters, has not God chosen those who are poor in the eyes of the world to be rich in faith and to inherit the kingdom he promised those who love him? But you have dishonored the poor. There's a series of passages here, and he's very, very strong wording here. I won't play devil's advocate for a minute. Why is he taking so much time to talk about where people sit. Seating arrangements. That made it into the Bible? Think about it, you know? Why would you make such a big deal? Why would you concern yourself with these things? Well, think about this. Have you ever been the new kid, if you want to switch sides here, the new kid looking for a seat in the lunchroom? How did it feel to come in and not have anywhere to sit? What was that experience like? Did you get the old seats taken from someone? You know, and you had to move on to the next table. You just didn't feel like you had a place to go. See, it was a big deal in that time. And I think many of us remember times that has happened to us. We can forget a lot of things that have happened to us, but something like that does kind of stick with you. Yep. How about on the bus? Yep. You know, there's a great movie, Forrest Gump. Most of us have probably seen it. And as the movie opens, Forrest, who's kind of poor in his wits, he can be poor in a lot of ways. He's not the brightest one. What did they say? Stupid is as stupid does, you know. A lot of great lines about that. The opening scenes of the movie, he gets on the bus, he's going to school for the first time, and he got the old seats taken several times in a row, right? And nobody wanted to sit by Forrest. Till he comes upon this little girl who says, "You can sit with me." And it's Jen A. Jen A, the love of his life. The woman he would marry someday, you know, mother of his child. He met this person because she shared her seat with Forrest, right? They became lifelong friends through thick and thin, through all kinds of things. It's a great movie about the different journey that they took. But it kind of began with just sharing your seat, you know, with somebody. Just opening it up, loving somebody that maybe other people didn't show that kind of love to. Poor is not necessarily poor in money. I don't think Forrest was poor in money. He was poor in friends at that time. You know, he didn't know anybody. And I think we can be poor in time. We can be poor in experience, poor in energy, poor in a lot of ways. We can all have different things that we're deficit in, be poor. And when somebody comes along and offers us an opportunity, it means the world to us, you know? I remember in high school, I had the unique experience of, I was homeschooled most of my life. So my first day of junior year high school was my first day in a public school, okay? And I didn't know anybody at lunchtime. So junior year, everybody's kind of paired off by then. They've been friends for years. I'm the new kid. I'm essentially a transfer, you know? And I looked around and didn't know where to sit. And there was a guy named Jim Moberly. I remember him. Who said, I said, "Can I sit with you?" He said, "Yeah, sure." We sat down. We started talking. I sat with Jim every day for lunch for the next 2 years. Jim and I were buddies, you know? I've kind of lost track of Jim, honestly, but I still remember him. I remember how I felt having somebody give their seat to me. It meant a lot, you know? And it formed a new friendship. Just that simple act, that simple kind act, opened things up. You know, we think about this on a micro. We can think about personal experiences. And I think God is not just a God of the small. He's a God of the big, too. There's things that I think if we as Christians were obeying this as fully as possible, it would have an impact not just in our church, it would have an impact on our society around us. Yeah. I want to think about another famous bus seating situation. Many of you know the story of Rosa Parks. She was someone who lived in Montgomery, Alabama in the 1950s. And in 1955, there was segregation on the buses, the front and the back. The white people sat in the front, the black people sat in the back. And she decided she was going to stand her ground and sit in the front. It started this whole, so she's often called the mother of the freedom movement, the civil rights movement that happened later on that developed. A lot of people think of her time taking a stand, "I'm going to sit here, I'm going to stay here, that we're going to desegregate things," as being pivotal point. But I want to do a thought exercise for a minute here. What if What if there had been somebody on the bus that's, when they started giving her a hard time, said, "No, she can have my seat. Forget about it. I'll move to the back." What if everybody that was being pushed to the back, not just Rosa Parks, every black woman and man who was pushed to the back, somebody had stood up and said, "No, they can take my seat.
Yeah.
I can sit in the back. It's fine." You know? Wouldn't that have been so much better? Now, I know that there's been some great things that have happened since then, and I don't mean to diminish the significance of it, of what Rosa Parks did, but I think you can start to see where just even these simple acts of love compounded over and over and over. If this is who we are as Christians, there's a lot of people that say that they're Christians in our society. If everybody was doing this, I mean, can you imagine how loving the Christians would be viewed every day? How much that would, they would be such an example of kindness and generosity. What if every time somebody came into church, five or six people said, "Hey, do you have a seat yet? Come sit by me.
Right.
Do you want to sit over here? You should sit towards the front. You can see better." You know, we start moving things around. If everybody felt that coming in, can you imagine how loved everybody would feel? I mean, it's such a great idea.
Yeah.
And it's just so clearly spelled out here. So when we don't do this, it hurts God's plan. Yep. God had a great plan. Don't show favoritism. Love everybody.
Yep.
Love as Jesus loved. Self-sacrificial love. In James chapter 2, verses 8 through 10, it says, "If you really keep the royal law found in Scripture, love your neighbor as yourself, you're doing right. But if you show favoritism, you sin and are convicted by the law as lawbreakers. For whoever keeps the whole law and yet stumbles at just one point is guilty of breaking all of it." When we show favoritism, it's like breaking a glass windshield. If you could put that slide up. Now, you got to ask yourself, is that windshield broken or not? Is it broken? It's only broken in that one part. Maybe, what, 10% of it's broken? The rest of the 90% is perfectly usable windshield, right? No, of course not. It's a broken windshield. And James doubles down here. He says, this is a big deal. You stumble on this point, you're guilty of breaking the whole thing. That's pretty intense.
Yeah.
It's pretty intense. When we show favoritism, when we judge people, when we discriminate, it's breaking the windshield, man.
Yeah.
It's not what it's intended to be. That windshield is a hazard. It could shatter driving down the road, spray some on the glass, or you know, it doesn't protect people. It becomes a hazard at that point. So, you know, I'm guilty of this. I have to confess, I'm guilty of this too, because I don't want to just say this is you people, whoever you people may be. You know, this is me too. I have a spot. You may notice I'm usually sitting right over there. Okay, I kind of like that spot. I go there every week, and I get here early enough. I can usually get it. You know, it's kind of my spot. And I remember a few months ago, I came in, I wasn't as early as I should, and Lana was sitting there. I felt some indignation. You felt it? I'm sorry, Lana. I'm sorry. It's my spot. And I had it, you know, I gotta tell you, Lana, I'm sorry. I wish I had had a better heart and just given it to you and said, "Yeah, great, here, sit here, I'll sit over here." That would have been better, you know? Don't we all have kind of our spots? I notice I stand up here a lot singing, and I kind of notice there's like sections in the church sometimes that kind of develop. Yeah. Do we get protective of our spot, like you and me? I want to tell you, that's not my spot anymore, okay? Somebody's there, I'm going to lay it down. If I get indignant with you, please remind me that I'm saying this now. I want to give up my spot here and now, okay? I want to honor somebody with my spot, okay? In James chapter 2, verses 14 through 17, it says, "What good is it, my brothers and sisters, if someone claims to have faith but has no deeds? Can such faith save them? Suppose a brother or sister is without clothes and daily food. If one of you says to them, 'Go in peace, keep warm and well fed,' but does nothing about their physical needs, what good is it?" Yeah. In the same way, faith by itself, if not accompanied by action, is dead. I believe that in the next couple weeks, your spot will be challenged. Yeah. Maybe figuratively here in this setting. Maybe some other things will be coming up. Yeah. But, you know, you're going to have a chance to give up your spot. And are you going to take it? Because if you just believe that you should and don't do it, what good is it? We're still at the broken windshield. Yeah. But if you give up your spot, I think that's an act of love. I think that's obedience to God. And I think that brings about change. So, in response to this, I wanted to do something here. You switch to the next slide. Congregation participation, everybody. Uh-oh. What I'd like to do is I'd like to take a couple minutes here. You don't have to move, okay? But it'd be great if you did. What I would say is I would encourage us to, we're going to take a short fellowship break. If you feel up to moving to a different spot, move to a different spot, try to pick your seats based on an act of love. So maybe it's sharing the seat next to you is an act of love. Maybe it's going over and sitting by somebody you haven't sat in a while. Maybe you have a nice spot that's yours in the front row. You could love somebody by sharing, saying, "Why don't you come up front? I'll sit in the back." Because this is a faith and deeds sermon. Come on, guys. There's got to be some participation here from the congregation. Are you ready for this or not? Are you ready? All right, we're going to take a short fellowship break here. Please mingle, all right? We'll be right back in a minute here. You took the spot. There you go. It's a good spot. I like that spot. Hey, welcome to the front, guys. Good to see you up here. Yeah, different view. What's that? You're loving somebody by giving up your spot. Give you the 1 minute warning here. 1 minute.
Hey Mark, your seat's pretty boxed
up. Apparently. See a few folks making the way to the good spot over here. It's a good spot.
Make sure they feel. Oh yeah, no kidding.
You're welcome to it, everybody. Did they feel honored?
Yeah. You said you were gonna have a discussion afterwards. Yeah. We'll talk about it later. I don't know,
Okay, has everybody got a spot they can settle into? Move around? Hey, thanks. You come get me after the sermon and tackle me for kicking you out of your spot.
Sorry. Don't be worried. We're just rushing, so.
All right. Amen, everybody. There's still some great seats up front here. If you haven't found a spot yet, please welcome you to sit towards the front here.
The musical chairs song playing.
Yeah, that would have been good. That would have been a good idea. Corey said I should have had the musical chairs song playing. I didn't think about that. I hope that we remember this. I hope you know, part of the reason you do this is to, because when you believe something and then you confirm it by what you do, you tend to remember it better. So hopefully we can remember this. We're not going to switch chairs every week at church, but this week hopefully it'll be something we can remember. And it'll help us, as we go into our week, think of other opportunities where we can give up our seat, you know? Because I think we want to take this with us, hopefully. James chapter 2, verses 21 through 24 says, "Was not our father Abraham considered righteous for what he did when he offered his son Isaac on the altar? You see that his faith and his actions were working together. His faith was made complete by what he did. And the scripture was fulfilled that says, Abraham believed God, and it was credited to him as righteousness. He was called God's friend. You see that a person is considered righteous by what they do, and not by faith alone." One of the things I learned this year about righteousness, because you think of righteousness as being kind of this holier than thou are of, you know, whatever. And righteousness in the Jewish tradition, from what I understand currently, my current understanding, is that it's right action, it's fairness among a group. So you can have righteousness between thieves after they've stolen from somebody else. They were not righteous towards the people they stole from, but between each other, if they divided up the loot, you know, evenly, that could be considered, you know, fair between them, that they didn't cheat each other, you know? It's right action towards each other. And so, you think about Abraham here for a minute. We always think about his righteousness towards God. But was he righteous towards Isaac? The story of Abraham is God called Abraham to be the father of many nations. When Abraham was 100 years old, he had a son named Isaac. Isaac was going to be the child of the promise. And God said, "I want you to take him to a mountaintop and sacrifice him to me." And Abraham, I'm sure, was very confused and, you know, disappointed in a way, maybe. I don't know. I mean, it says that he believed that maybe God would raise him from the dead. So he believed either way. Abraham had great faith in God. And as he was about to sacrifice Isaac, God said, "Wait, nope. You believe, here, there's a ram I'm providing for you instead." And figuratively, the ram was Jesus, like Jesus was sacrificed and said. He was the lamb that was slain later on. There's a lot of symbolism in this story. But I think about Isaac. Isaac was going to be sacrificed. Was that right action towards Isaac? Was it the righteous thing to do? And I would contend that, yeah, I think Isaac probably remembered that the rest of his life. Because, yeah, I'm sure he did. I'm sure he did. But I think that what he learned from that was how deep his father's faith was. And how Abraham had ordered his hierarchy. That there is a difference between God and men. There is some favoritism between God and men. We need to put God first. God is first and foremost. I think Isaac learned that. And Abraham was figuratively, in a way, trying to give up his seat as the father of many nations by showing his faith. And Isaac, I think, knew that. And Isaac is not someone that wrestled with his faith particularly in Genesis. I mean, later on, Jacob and Esau, they wrestled, and then the descendants. But Isaac was one that it really stuck with him, I think, to be faithful to God. He trusted God through many things. I think he really tried to trust God forever. And I think Abraham's example here really probably made a deep impression on him. And it was righteous to do that. I think we can be righteous towards one another just by obeying God. Sometimes you're not sure how to be righteous towards somebody, how to not show favoritism, what to do exactly. But just by loving God, and just by obeying him, you may indirectly affect them and be righteous towards them as well. Because I think when we're under God's household, when we do things in the right way, God structures things so that we We're righteous not only to him, but to each other. And it brings order to things, you know, that maybe we wouldn't understand otherwise. And we don't always understand what God is doing. But when we obey him, hopefully it's out of faith, and we're doing it as a confirmation. When we don't understand and we still obey, God honors that. So I wanted to share a couple stories as we're getting ready to close out here. I want to tell you about a friend of mine. This is a friend of mine that I knew through some of the business networking that I did. We served in different things in the community together. I'd see her several times a month. Her name is Liz Larson. She used to work for WGLT, the public radio station in town here. And she had passed away in a boating accident a couple weeks ago. I know that many of us are still mourning over our brother Joe, and many of you went to the memorial on Friday. I've been mourning Joe. I've been also mourning Liz. I've got two people recently that kind of died suddenly, both young. But I wanted to tell you a little bit about Liz. I wanted to remember her for a minute because she gave up her seat a few times. I've got three stories about Liz I wanted to share because I think she's someone that I'm inspired by, and I want to remember her this way. Liz, we were involved in a Rotary Club together, but not in the same club. There's five clubs in the community. I'm in one. She's in another. The last conversation I had with her a few days before she passed away, we were talking about, you know, why she chose to go to the club that she went to. And she was sharing a story about how ticked off she was about this thing that happened at my club. She went to visit my club, and there was a woman there who I won't say who she is, but she's fairly well-to-do, a prominent figure in our community. And Liz felt like she was kind of flaunting her money a little bit, and everybody was coming over to sit with her. She just didn't feel like it was right. She's like, this is not right, you know? She was very vocal about it, and a little more so than I would have been. Gina's laughing because she felt very strongly about this, you know, and used some choice words about it. But you know what I appreciated about her was she didn't want to stand for this favoritism. This is exactly what we're talking about. There was favoritism, and she couldn't stand it, and she said, I'm going somewhere else. I respected her for that. I respect her now for that. She loved people that were outcasts. She loved children. At her memorial, a lot of her friends came up and talked about how they didn't have very many friends before they met Liz, how Liz was very inclusive immediately, and they always felt like she was their friend. I felt that way. Anytime I'd see her at these networking events, you know, sometimes you gotta engage in small talk, and it's kind of shallow, superficial, or whatever. And you just wish you had a friend to talk to. If I saw Liz, I always felt like I could talk to Liz. We'd have real conversation, you know. She would open up her life. She did the same with kids. She was sweet to kids. She would listen to them and talk with them. The day of her passing, she was with some friends of hers, and her friends had kids. Liz had a husband, Nathan. She didn't have kids of her own, but she loved kids. And there was a little girl named Eleanor, who was the daughter of her friend. And Liz wanted Eleanor to sit in the boat with her. She shared her seat. She said, come sit with me. And they sat together. It was another time that Liz is giving up her seat, you know, or not necessarily just trying to stick with her friend, her older friends, but loving her friend's kids. You know, kids oftentimes don't get treated with the same respect that adults do. And she loved the kid that way. They got too close to a short dam near Kankakee. And the water was kind of, she knew they were going to get pulled over. And so Liz secured Eleanor to the boat. And later, after, when they went over, Eleanor survived. Liz didn't. She got stuck in the turbulence, kept sucking her down. And they asked Eleanor, were you scared that time? She said, no. No, I wasn't scared because Liz, you know, was taking care of me. She told me to hold on tight, keep my head above water. Those are the last things she said. I like to think that Liz gave up her seat for Eleanor. She could have focused on taking care of herself first, saving herself, but she was more concerned for this child. And, you know, the Bible says, greater love has none than this, that we lay down our lives for one another. She did that. Right to the end, she did that. And I know many of you don't know her, but I wanted to share about her because I was just honored to be her friend and to know these things about her. Her husband, Nathan, at the memorial talked about how changed he was because of Liz, how much of an introvert he was before he met her. And how what he said was, you know, you're with somebody long enough and you start to become like them. He says, I'm never going to be the same. He said, before, if this had happened, I would have holed up in a basement. You wouldn't have seen me for years. He said, but I refuse to do that now. Because it dishonors the legacy of my wife. That's not what she would have wanted. The more we walk with God, the more we're going to be like him. The more we're going to be changed. I think it's why the faith in deeds is so important. Because when we obey God, we're walking with him. We're with him. We become like him. And we're forever changed. In James 2, verse 30, second half of verse 23, it says, Abraham believed God, and it was credited to him as righteousness, and he was called God's friend. I think we want to be friends with God. I think we need to love each other and be friends. This is something that you say, what's the big deal, you know, where you sit? What does it matter whether or not I sit in the front or I sit in the back or I sit wherever my spot is, you know? It's such a great opportunity. It's a simple act to show love to somebody else. It's a simple thing, and you don't know the impact it's going to have on somebody. It could save their life. So as we close out today, I hope that you remember to not hold on to what's yours, not to show favoritism to those maybe that come in dressed nice, not to show favoritism to somebody unlike you or against somebody that's unlike you, someone that's like you or somebody that you think is better than you. We want to love everyone as Christ loved us, self-sacrificing love. Read one more time the verse we started with, which is, a new command I give you, love one another. As I have loved you, so you must love one another. By this, everyone will know that you are my disciples if you love one another. Let's stand for a closing song.